From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now here's your host, Mark Kepler.
California's well-intentioned open meeting or sunshine laws were enacted to ensure more open government. Is it possible that overexposure to the sunshine has made government decisions worse? That is the subject of a new report from the nonpartisan Little Hoover Commission. Our guest is the executive director of the Little Hoover Commission, Carol D'Alia. Unintended consequences. Do open meeting laws undermine good government decision making?
We'll also hear from Professor Nate Monroe with UC Merced, Paul Hurley, the former editorial page editor of the Visalia Times Delta, and Hilda Cantu Montoy, former Fresno City attorney and now in private practice representing numerous public entities here in the Valley.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from The Wonderful Company, harvesting health and happiness around the world, and by Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute, it's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
Have California's well-intentioned open meeting laws actually made government decisions worse? That's the subject of a new report from the nonpartisan Little Hoover Commission. We're fortunate to have the Executive Director of the Little Hoover Commission, Carol D'Alia, as our guest. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, first, just tell our audience a little bit about the Little Hoover Commission. What exactly is its role?
Sure. We are a 13-member body. We have 4 legislative members and 9 members of the public. They're appointed by the governor, legislative leadership, and our mission is to make state government more efficient and effective.
Period.
Yeah.
Good. Right to the point. So let's talk about this recent examination of California's open meeting laws. What prompted that?
Well, it's actually kind of an unusual story. We were doing a hearing in April of 2014, and the topic of the hearing was energy governance. We were talking to the state's 3 entities about how they work together to make sure our lights stay on and make sure our rates stay affordable. We had a panel that included a representative from the Natural Resources Defense Council, a Berkeley professor, and an economist. And our commission said, you know, you work with these different bodies. What's your opinion? What are the obstacles? And sort of out of the blue, the representative from the Natural Resources Defense Council says, well, if you really want to fix things, if you really want to make things function, you have to fix the Bagley-Keene Act. And then he went on, specifically, some changes that were made 6 years ago that prevent people from being able
and
to
Bagley-Keene is what?
Bagley-Keene is one of 2 open meeting acts in the state. So we have the Bagley-Keene Act, which governs state boards and commissions, and its companion Brown Act that governs city councils, okay, school boards, things like that.
And they said you got to fix that law.
Well, fix that was made in 2009.
Fix the fix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the result, I guess, when I was reading your report, they said that the result was that these 5 CPUC, that's the Public Utilities Commission,
mm-hmm,
is that right? Board members largely stopped talking to one another about issues regarding multi-billion-dollar decisions on some of the state's most complex matters. Why did that happen? Why did they just stop talking to each other?
Well, it was this amendment that happened in 2009, and instead of just having that public boards and commissions couldn't deliberate or make decisions, they added the words they could no longer discuss. You can't discuss anything that might come in front of your body. So what the representative at our hearing was saying, you know, it's the Public Utilities Commission. We also were hearing from the Energy Commission, but it actually applies to all state boards and commissions that people can no longer discuss without being in the public light.
So you can't discuss anything.
Anything that might come under your purview,
in your jurisdiction, correct?
Which is very broad.
Which is not necessarily what's on the agenda for that next meeting.
No.
It's anything that your agency deals with.
Right.
That's pretty broad. So what did the witnesses say that, what did that do to the ability of the CPUC to make quality decisions?
Well, again, it's CPUC as well as the other boards and commissions, but it actually drove down the decision-making into the dark. So the commissioners themselves couldn't speak, but the staff could. So the knowledge and the decisions are now being made in the dark. So instead of greater transparency, there's less.
So the staff, which is unelected,
right,
unelected bureaucrats,
right,
they're then making the decisions or talking to each other, but the elected people aren't.
Correct.
It's kind of becoming siloed decision-making. No one commission member talks to another commission member.
Correct.
Until they're at the panel. And then I'm thinking also, then who has knowledge of where these people are going? Probably interest groups and lobbyists who talk to each of the individual 5 members are actually going to know what's going on that board and panel,
before the members on the panel actually know what's going on.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how we found it. We felt like the lobbyists were like bees pollinating flowers. They'd go to Commissioner A, Commissioner B, and they would know everything that was going to happen. One of the public utilities commissioners said he walks in the meeting room. Everybody there knows exactly how the vote's going to go. Everybody but him and the other four commissioners.
Can you go up to the lobbyists and ask them, how's the vote? No, I don't want to ask that question. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the why, what, and how of California's open meeting laws. That conversation when we return. This is the Maddie Report. California, like many states, has passed open meeting or sunshine laws to ensure that certain government proceedings and decisions are made open to the public. Our guest is Carol D'Alia, the executive director of the Little Hoover Commission that recently issued a report on California's sunshine laws. So can you provide some a brief introduction of California's open meeting laws?
Sure.
I'm wondering what they cover and what is their underlying purpose.
Okay. So there's two laws, the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act, that governs state boards and commissions, and as I said earlier, its companion, the Brown Act, covers locals, city councils, board of supervisors, school boards, and their advisory bodies as well.
But these laws have been around for a long time. For example, the Brown Act was signed into law by Governor Earl Warren back in 1953. So this has been, and even the Bagley Act, which became known as Bagley-Keene later, mm-hmm. the local government law you were talking about, was signed by, surprise, surprise, Ronald Reagan, in 1967. So these laws have been around for a long time.
Absolutely, and they're good laws as they were originally conceived. You want the public essentially to have a role at the decision-making table. That's what the open meeting acts are all about. It means when you're going to have a meeting, you put out an advance notice. You let people who are interested know, and you post it on your website. You have your agenda. The public's able to attend, and the public's able to participate and make comments on things that are going to be decided that affect their lives. So it's very appropriate that we have these open meeting acts.
But those laws have been amended over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of the amendments have done what, and some of the court decisions have done what? So it leads us to where we are now. What's happened over time since those laws were initially passed?
Sure. So in 2006, there was a court case. It was Wolf versus City of Fremont. And it was a local government case where officials had talked to each other about a topic, but then the topic never came on to
the topic. I actually wrote that down. It was a topic about the number of police responses to something, and the city manager decided that they were going to do fewer police responses to this particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went around, my understanding is he went around and talked to each of the city council members to get their support.
Exactly.
And there was something, I think it was called a serial meeting.
Yes.
What's a serial meeting?
A serial meeting would be if Commissioner A talks to Commissioner B and then Commissioner B talks to Commissioner C.
So they don't all get together, but
right.
It's a chain.
And it can be done electronically now, too.
Okay, so, and I think my notes here said it's they began limiting responses to home invasion alarms. That was the issue. And so city manager goes and talks individually to these folks, and so that leads to a lawsuit. And
right.
What does the Court of Appeals in this 2006 decision, what do they say?
So they said that because the decision was never acted on, that it wasn't illegal. And so what happened was that kind of threw the Open Meeting Acts into disarray. So then it was very murky as to who could talk to who and when and if it's going to be on the agenda or not. So everybody at that point in time generally agreed that that court case led to greater confusion. So the people agreed there needed to be a change, an amendment. And so that's what they did in 2008, and that's where people got together, the League of California Cities with the California Newspaper Publishers Association and others, and they said, what can we live with? How can we word this so we get back to where we were before, so people understand what they can and can't do? But what they did that was a little bit beyond what had happened before was they added those two words, to discuss. And for a lot of people, for the lawyers, that changed everything.
And to discuss any subject matter within that particular agency or council or whatever is jurisdiction.
Right. So you could imagine a city council, how many different types of things could possibly come up in front of the city council. So they just don't talk to each other. It's, they've been advised, and rightly so, by their lawyers. Their lawyers say, you just don't talk to each other outside of a public meeting. And so they don't want to go to a social event together. They don't want to be seen at a conference that somebody holds to provide information. I even heard recently that a lawyer advised an advisory group to a commission that they couldn't even use a doodle, which is that online application where you can set meetings so you check, are you available on Friday or whatever. And they were told they couldn't even doodle with each other.
That's just a lawyer being overly cautious. But, you know, truth be told, lawyers are supposed to protect their clients. And so they are, by nature, risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
So does the law, the way you seem to be describing it, does it include these informal discussions?
Absolutely.
And so elected officials then, they're not allowed to bounce general policy issues off their colleagues. They're not allowed to learn from each other. They're, you know, it seems like these things would have an impact on their ability to draft good policy and to compromise to draft good policy.
Absolutely. On the one hand, like if you've got something like the Public Utilities Commission or the Energy Commission, they're deciding these multi-million, multi-billion dollar issues. And often they have various dockets going on different topics. So you might have something on solar going, you might have something on demand use and rates, all going at the same time. And these different commissioners are all working on a piece of it, but they can never have even a generic conversation. So like, what do you think of the trends in the solar industry? That they could have that with anybody other than other board members.
Okay. So I want to talk about something else, these special rules regarding ex parte communications. And those are private one-on-one conversations between key government decision makers and someone.
Right.
So the California Administrative Procedures Act says, listen, for adjudicatory matters, if it's in front of a judge, mm-hmm. one party can't talk to a judge without the other party present. And that makes sense.
Right.
But agencies also do rules and regulations, and ex parte communications are permitted when they're listening to stakeholders saying, well, how do you feel about this new rule? What are your thoughts on that? I think everybody agrees that judges shouldn't be talking to parties individually, but what about agencies talking to stakeholders about regulations?
Sure. So we kind of put the adjudicatory aside because there is general agreement, but when we looked at other ex parte communications, we actually we're kind of swimming against the tide this year. You had the PUC and PG&E, who is their regulated the regulated body, so the regulator with the regulated, having these secret communications via email and whatnot. So as we were doing our study, all of that was exploding in the press, and people were outraged, as they should be. But where we saw it was, so everybody was, there was a rush to try and tighten the rules. How can we limit ex parte communication? And our feeling, from our commission standpoint, was, people are going to break the law. You tighten the rules, and the only people who are going to obey the rules are the ones that are already obeying them. And now you've just, you know, tied their hands. They can't learn anything. They won't know anything. We even historically did work 8 years or so ago. We were looking at water boards. And we actually said that the regional water boards were making ill-informed decisions because they couldn't talk enough. Their rules were too strict, and we suggested they loosen them. So we're kind of coming down on the side of there is a role for communication between private parties, as long as others are aware that these conversations are happening.
Okay, well, thanks for that overview of California's open meeting laws. We're going to talk a little more about the downside of open government in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. So can you do too much of a good thing? Has the decades-long crusade for open government overreached and begun to obstruct good government? We're talking to Carol D'Alia with the Little Hoover Commission that recently issued a report on the unintended consequences of California's open meeting laws. And, you know, we were talking earlier about these two words to discuss that were added to this 2009 amendment to the law, and it's been fairly problematic, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. People don't talk to each other. And so it limits the information gathering, and it makes the decision-making, as I said, it drives it back to the staff level.
But yeah, so it's less transparent, not more, and that's
right.
Obviously a problem. So in your report, you also conducted an informal survey of elected officials, and you were very careful to say this is not statistically valid, but what were their feelings about the new law?
Sure. So I want to preface that by saying why we did the survey. So as we were, you know, talking about the Open Meeting Acts, we kept getting elected officials, local officials that would call us, and they would want to complain off the record about how hard it was, how they couldn't.
Ex parte communication.
Yeah, and that they couldn't, they were making ill-informed decisions, but they wouldn't, for the most part, we've eventually found a few that would go on the record. So we said, well, are these just a few people who are complaining, or is this widespread? So we conceived this idea of doing the survey. We had, like you said, it wasn't scientific. We had about 270 responders. And across the board, more than two-thirds of them felt that, yes, these rules were making it difficult for them to make informed decisions, and that they thought that that it warranted a reform.
Some kind of change. And so ex parte communications, there was some discussion, I think you said, that most people felt that they were helpful. as a general rule? Well, not in adjudicatory matters. We have already decided that that's off the table.
Right.
But in terms of regulation, hearing from stakeholders is a good thing because it refines those regulations and makes them better.
I'd say there was agreement on my commission, but I think, again, because of a lot of the scandals that were going on in the past year or so, a lot of people felt like there shouldn't be conversations at all. And we disagree with that. We feel like there's a time and a place, and as long as rules are followed, then it's something that's helpful to somebody who's on a board or commission. And it's usually the ones that deal with complicated topics like energy and water.
Yeah, and we also talked earlier about the fact that these open meeting laws can sometimes drive down decision-making to the staff level because the council doesn't want to talk because they're worried about a lawsuit. Let me kind of switch gears a little bit here and talk about these gadflies that we often see at school board meetings or city council meetings. They stand up and talk about every issue. Sometimes it's relevant, it seems like. Sometimes you wonder, what are they talking about? It seems like California's open meeting laws appear to permit this kind of abuse, frankly, of the public comment period. How do you deal with that issue, frankly?
Well, we saw it across the state, but we found the larger the venue, the larger the problem. So I would challenge anyone to go online and look at an LA City Council meeting and come to a different conclusion than we did. They had a dozen or so people that, according to some of their council members, show up every single meeting. They speak 1 minute on it. Doesn't matter what the topic, they find a way to kind of sort of make themselves relevant. They are obnoxious. They say things that are derogatory about the elected officials. They say things that you wouldn't want a fourth grade class to go and observe. This is a public process. It's that bad.
Democracy is a messy thing.
But there's a person who wears a red Klan outfit. And they ramble. And what happens is exactly the opposite. The people who really have something to say, the person who's, you know, whether it's we're going to put a hotel down the street from you or we're going to, you know, add more bike lanes, well, the people who this is going to affect and really care never get to say because it goes on forever. And they're so disgusted by the people who are abusing the system that the real citizen doesn't get to say anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we talk about these changes in laws and what's necessary, if you talk to proponents of open meeting laws, you know, the media, frankly, the newspapers, mm-hmm. and those, they're saying, listen, there's nothing wrong with the law. What we have here is some overly cautious attorneys advising city councils and school boards they can't do anything. And the law is really much more flexible than that. Isn't there some truth to that argument that it's really these lawyers that are making their clients overly cautious?
So the argument that you just raised, we heard over and over again. We included the California Newspaper Publishers Association, Californians Aware, all of those types of organizations. And we want the same thing. We want open government and transparency. But what we heard was that the lawyers are advising their clients because they don't want them to get sued. And in the case of the LA City Council, some of their advisory bodies who have tried to remove some of these people who were the gadflies, mm-hmm. they've been sued and they've cost the taxpayers a lot of money.
And the reality is that is a lawyer's job, right? A lawyer's job is to protect their client from being sued. So they do have a tendency to be risk averse,
right?
And tell their clients, no, don't do that. You could get in trouble. And you saw that.
Yeah, and then you have the people who are on the boards and commissions, the ones that I've mentioned that make these multi-billion dollar decisions. They don't want to do anything that's going to cause that decision to get dragged through a court. So they follow what the lawyers say and they don't talk to each other.
Well, interesting discussion on the unintended consequences of California's open meeting laws. Well, can we have both open government and effective government? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. One premise behind California's open meeting laws is that government decisions made in the public are better than those made in secret. A recent report indicates that assumption may not be entirely correct. How do we overcome some of the problematic and unintended consequences of California's open meeting laws? We're talking to Carol D'Alia with the Little Hoover Commission about a recent report they issued on California's sunshine laws. So how can we change the law to encourage more, not less, transparency? Which was the intent of the law.
Absolutely. Well, we came up with what we thought was a very conservative and minor fix that would go a long way. So what we suggested was both Bagley-Keene and the Brown Act be amended to either remove those words to discuss or just to clarify that it was okay for elected officials and people on boards and commissions to talk to each other. As simple as that. They can talk to each other. They can't deliberate. They can't form a consensus. They can't decide. But they can share information.
It's amazing we have to have a law to say that they can talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other thing, too, is that word, you know, on any matter, that word any is such a big word in law. Any matter within your jurisdiction, boy, that really that probably needs to be have some thought there as well. Well, what about making the public's business more, not less democratic? I mean, one of the things we talked about was these decisions are being driven down now to the staff level. These are unelected people as opposed to the council or board level.
Exactly. They're happening in the dark. The people don't have a spot at the table. It was very frustrating because we felt as if this was done with good intentions to you know, clear up something that had become murky as a result of a court case. But the end result was that suddenly nobody was talking, and so the staff had to do it. So the staff know a lot, the staff make a lot of decisions, and the board members or the council members show up and vote. The public doesn't know what's going on. They have less information.
You know, it sounds, things sometimes sound good in theory,
yeah,
but then in practice you realize, oops, the unintended consequences. So let's talk about ex parte communication. We talked about that a little bit. Those are those communications, those private one-on-one discussions. Again, not talking about adjudicatory matters, we're talking about informal rulemaking. Is there a way that some changes in the law should be made to allow more allow for ex parte communications and rulemaking so stakeholders can come in and talk to a an agency and say, hey, this law is going to, or this regulation is going to affect us adversely this way?
Well, over the course of our study, there was a lot of activity trying to rein in some of the ex parte laws. And so we wound up saying, they're okay as is. And each entity, whether it's the Utilities Commission or whether it's the Air Board or whether it's the Coastal Commission, they have subtle nuances. So we didn't want to have a one-size-fits-all that, you know, here, do this. But what we generally said was keep doing ex parte. It's important. But there was an opportunity for more transparency and maybe more accountability. So in terms of maybe you want to put more stuff on your website as far as what was said. A lot of times you'll have this sort of, so this, you know, Party A talked to Commissioner B, and they talked about solar energy. Well, that doesn't really tell you a lot. So there's more that they could do.
Except, for example, they could also add, what was their argument? What was the position that they
exactly
argued? And that gives a little more disclosure for
so
that.
So we felt like there could be more of that.
Okay. What about helping make public officials' decision-making better, more informed? Are there changes in the law that we could have that would help to make those decisions a little more informed?
Well, again, it's our recommendation, let's just go back to where we were before the murky court case. Let's go back and allow people to talk to each other.
Because
let's,
one of the things, when you hear these discussions about commissions, a lot of people that are on these commissions have expertise in different areas.
Yes.
And one of the arguments that I've heard is that, you know, you want people with different expertise in different areas to cross-fertilize, to talk to each other, and that would result in hopefully a better decision.
Exactly.
As opposed to silo decisions.
Yeah, you look at the Energy Commission, and they're selected based on expertise. So that's the whole reason they designed it that way.
Yeah, that's a great example. Now let's talk about decorum. We were talking earlier about these gadflies at public meetings. What can be done to improve the decorum at local government meetings?
So that was a really tough question because, again, democracy is the cornerstone, having public participation, allowing people to make comments on issues that are going to affect their lives. At the same time, you have the small group that abuses the system. The legislature provides an example. They, if there is somebody who is out of line, they can be escorted out of a legislative committee room. And so I don't think that the locally elected officials should have to put up with something that the legislature doesn't have to put up with. So what is the exact sweet spot on how do we rein in the abuse while making sure that the public is able to make comments? I think that's something that the legislature could provide a model.
The legislature could look to itself.
Yes.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for those recommendations on how to promote open and effective government. Our guest has been Carol Dialia with the Little Hoover Commission. Thanks a lot again for joining us.
Thanks.
If you want to stay current on state and local politics, you can follow the Maddie Institute on Facebook, Twitter, or log on to our website at maddieinstitute.org. This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report. Thanks for joining us.
The views expressed in the Maddie Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Maddie Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed on the Maddie Report, visit our website at maddieinstitute.org.
You're listening to the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, on KMJ.
Up next, what impact do open meeting laws have on the way local Valley communities conduct business? We'll get perspectives from Professor Nate Monroe with UC Merced, Paul Hurley, the former editorial page editor of the Visalia Times-Delta, and Hilda Cantu-Montoy, the former Fresno City attorney and now in private practice representing numerous public entities here in the Valley. Welcome back. Have the state's open meeting laws helped or hurt decision-making in Valley cities, counties, school, and special districts? We're going to ask Professor Nate Monroe with UC Merced. Welcome, Professor Monroe.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Hurley, the former editorial page editor of the Visalia Times-Delta. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Mark. Hello.
And Hilda Cantu-Montoy, former Fresno City attorney and now in private practice representing numerous public entities in the Valley, including the cities of Kerman and San Joaquin, as well as general counsel to the Selma-Kingsburg Fowler Sanitation District and also another organization over in Santa Clara as well. Lots of organizations throughout the Valley. So, Hilda, we're going to start with you first. Welcome, by the way.
Thank you.
So, California's open meeting laws, we know what they're supposed to do. But what about the unintended consequences? You know, on balance, are the state's open meeting laws helping or hurting local decision-making here in the Valley?
I believe they're helping. I believe that they help having open and public government decision-making. And why would we have open meetings if decisions are going to be made in secret or by a majority of the members outside of a public meeting?
Okay, I'm going to say that's a rhetorical question, but I'm going to follow up with Professor Monroe on that and say, you know, Hilda makes a really good point. Increased transparency is something everybody would seem to want, but there's been some discussion about whether or not it hurts things like the ability to forge compromises or draw on each member's expertise. What are your thoughts on that, Professor Monroe?
Well, I think it's a balance. I mean, and there are real trade-offs. So, sort of academically, we tend to think of this as a competition between the trustee model of representation and the delegate model, right? And the delegate model is one in which we want maximum transparency, and we want our elected officials to take into account as much as possible the opinions of the people that elected them and try to make decisions basically purely on what they think those folks would do in their shoes. The alternative model, which is a trustee model, assumes that we elect people partly because they're going to do a good job handling situations that we didn't anticipate and that we don't have expertise about. And so, you know, in some sense, if we think that those people have expertise and information that we don't have, we may want them to be able to deliberate without the distraction of sort of public demands where the public is not as informed. So I think being even-handed about it and thoughtful about the circumstances in which one is better than the other is important.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, a side point, but an interesting point, that is this trust versus delegate model. If you do the delegate model, wouldn't you just do, why don't we need even elected officials, just do polling and ask people what they think and just vote, you know, that way? You know, why do we even need representatives if we're going to use a delegate model?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a pure delegate model, that's true.
Okay, Paul, I'm going to get you in here, too. I know you have, as a former newspaper guy, you've got something to say here. What were your thoughts on this?
Well, I think it becomes more difficult the smaller the entity and the smaller the body. Small communities, for instance, office holders in small communities are going to have a difficult time getting here into the letter of the law as far as the Brown Act goes, because they're going to encounter each other in all kinds of situations. Whereas larger bodies like the state legislature, I don't think it's a problem at all. In fact, I think those open meeting laws and transparency could probably be strengthened. But, you know, as Nate points out, it takes an application of common sense as well as a true understanding of what your role is as an elected official.
You know, Hilda, you've represented both. I mean, you've represented the city of Fresno. You're representing some smaller communities. In your experience, have you found that California's sunshine laws have inhibited local officials from talking to one another?
I have really not seen that. Remember that the prohibition is against the majority talking and developing their collective concurrence outside of a meeting. So there's no prohibition for three members of a seven-member board, such as the City Council in Fresno, or two members of a five-member board, which is the case for most small cities, from talking to each other. I do agree with Paul that it does get a little more challenging for the smaller communities. And that's true not only with respect to open meeting laws, but also other laws such as conflicts of interest. It does get a bit challenging. But there's ways to talk with each other. And either there's a lot of times you can designate an ad hoc committee of less than a quorum to study or review a particularly controversial matters and then bring them back to the full body. And my experience is that bodies are very good at selecting a committee comprised of members on both sides of an issue to try to persuade each other, bring back something to the full board, and then present it to the body in public and receive public input. But I really have not seen an adverse impact on members speaking, being able to just talk to each other.
Paul, I mean, you're a newspaper guy, and I'm guessing you have a certain perspective here on the on transparency. You obviously support it. Do you think transparency results in better decisions, or, you know, even where it doesn't, it's worth the sacrifice, sacrificing some efficiency for increased transparency and greater, you know, public participation in government?
Well, even when it doesn't, and I'm not sure that I would agree that you sacrifice in efficiency. Good government takes time, and a lot of times people don't understand that. You really do have to deliberate and weigh all kinds of options and make sure that every party that you're affecting is heard from. So I'm not so sure that you're going to lose efficiency with transparency. What you gain is public trust, and that's immeasurable. And once you lose that, you're sunk.
Yeah, yeah. Professor Monroe, it seems like, you know, Hilda and Paul are saying that, you know, kind of disagreeing with what the Little Hoover Commission report said. The Little Hoover Commission report seems to say that, you know, you are sacrificing some efficiency in the name of transparency. Who do you agree with?
I don't think there's any doubt that you sacrifice efficiency in the name of transparency, although I guess I didn't necessarily understand that to be, that Hilda and Paul to be claiming the opposite, only that the sacrifice is worth it. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, you do lose efficiency. I mean, there's just no doubt about it, right? I mean, I don't think there's any argument that you maintain maximum efficiency and maximum transparency. Similarly, I think you probably, in some instances, lose some, I guess, purity of decision-making in as much as members sort of can be removed. If lack of transparency allows sort of lack of some political pressure. But as Paul says, right, it also opens the possibility of skepticism and lack of trust by the public. And I think my argument is simply that, you know, that an extreme of transparency, right, where no conversation could happen without, you know, the public being aware of it, would be a bad thing. And as Hilda points out, that's not exactly what, you know, that's not what the Brown Act does. But so I just think we need to think carefully about what the balance is before we push to an extreme of transparency or an extreme of lack of transparency.
Yeah. Paul, you know, the Valley
said, okay. Mark, the advocates for efficiency in government, who are usually critics of government, often point to the fact that the private sector, corporate America, operates much more quickly and efficiently and sometimes effectively than government does. But government is not the private sector, and there's no reason it should be held to those standards or vice versa. I don't know. I'm not sure where efficiency is such a benefit in the public sector. Now you can point to something like high speed rail and look how that thing has moved along. But, you know, who's to say that that's not a good thing, that you take our time to make good decisions?
Yes, yeah, so you're kind of rejecting that government as business model. But Paul, let me ask you this. You know, the Valley's had its share of corrupt government officials. You know, the FBI's Operation Rezone in the 1990s comes to mind. You'd think that California's open meeting laws would have made such corruption a little more difficult. But the critics are saying that maybe the opposite may be true, that the state's open meeting laws give lobbyists an advantage because they're free to talk to elected officials and they know the score beforehand, while elected officials are reluctant to talk to each other for fear of violating the open meeting laws. So are the critics right? Does the law give lobbyists a tactical advantage here?
I think the way the government is set up now, lobbyists do have a tactical advantage. And it's just not the open meetings laws, it's term limits. It's a number of other restrictions on what lawmakers can do. Again, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing. We kind of have to live with that. But in that case, the people who are trying to influence government often have an advantage over those who are actually trying to operate government. I guess I'd have to agree.
Hilda, what do you think?
They probably do often. Lobbyists know what the majority vote will end up being because they are well equipped with information. They have studied the issue. They've had the opportunity to speak one-on-one with each elected official. So sometimes they do have that advantage. But I've also been part of this for 30 years, and I've seen many times when everybody predicts one outcome, and I think we've all seen that, because it came out in the Fresno Bee or because lobbyists are talking, and the outcome is the total opposite because of public input. Often public officials will start considering the viewpoints of the members of the public. So do they have some advantage? Yeah, they probably do. But I don't think, again, that on balance that we should do away with open meeting laws because of that.
Professor Monroe, I want you to kind of weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, I guess I see it as exactly the opposite. Not only does this not give public – this doesn't give – In absolute terms, right, if we're only thinking, you know, what makes lobbyists' ability to access legislators easier, public officials easier, sure. But relative to the common citizen, transparency laws are a huge advantage for private citizens, because if you were to take them away, lobbyists have the resources and ability and influence to be able to still show up in their offices, to be able to get them on the phone, to be able to find out what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. Public meetings are, frankly, one of the only ways that common citizens have to really have their mind heard in a forum where elected officials are sort of capped audience.
Yeah.
And you know, I think so. You know, sure. You know, it would make it a little harder for lobbyists to have their voice heard, and it would make it infinitely harder for the public. So I don't see it in terms of relative influence. I don't see it as an advantage for lobbyists.
Okay, well, let me switch gears a little here and talk about, you know, I know things that you dealt with as Fresno City Attorney, and that is the problem of these public gadflies that show up to every city council meeting or every school board meeting and want to comment on every single issue. Is that a real problem?
That's a real problem from time to time, and it's like an ebb and flow. There will be one person that shows up at every meeting for weeks or sometimes months, and then they go away. And then there's, you know, the term gadfly sounds like a really bad thing, but if you're talking about persons who come in and want to express their opinion and provide good input, there's a lot of really good people that are knowledgeable and have really good information, and they attend meetings and they present good information for decision makers, and they can effect positive action by being there. So, yeah, it can be a problem, and it's just more annoying than anything else. And it does, we used the word efficiency earlier, it does make meetings longer often because of what they do. Unfortunately, sometimes they are tuned out because, you know, nobody wants to listen, and sometimes they actually have something good to say, but because they're talking about everything and because they usually use strident voices, they're tuned out. But again, the value of public input outweighs that annoyance that may be created by people that do what you're talking about. To me, it's just as bad or sad to see no members of the public present in meeting after meeting after meeting where significant decisions are being made.
Yeah, Paul, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
Objected to the term gadflies and a criticism of people who take the time to invest in become interested and to get involved in their government.
Okay, so nobody likes the term.
There's a lot of nonsensical things said.
So nobody likes the term gadflies. I think that's established.
Elected officials are often just as bad at every level, from city councils right up to Congress.
Well, I want to ask.
There are the same kind of people who are elected.
Yeah, let me ask Professor Monroe. We've only got about 30 seconds left in this segment. I don't want to get his input here. You know, Little Hoover Commission was saying that these people that come to every meeting, want to comment on every issue, really abuse the public comment opportunities. What are your thoughts on that? Is this just part of free speech?
I think it is a part of free speech, number one. And number two, you know, the abuse of public comment opportunities is not equivalent to coming and showing up and speaking and saying the same thing at every meeting, right? There are certainly abuses, people that don't take it seriously, people that do it for entertainment, but I think that's probably a minority of the folks that some might refer to as gadflies.
Okay. So on balance, probably, you know, we need to have these people come to these meetings. We just maybe need to control the abuse of the public comment opportunities. But let's talk a little bit more about transparency and efficiency in government in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Welcome back. We're talking to Hilda Cantu-Montoy, former Fresno City attorney and now in private practice representing numerous public entities throughout the Valley. Paul Hurley, former editorial page editor with the Visalia Times-Delta, and UC Merced political science professor Nate Monroe about the state's open meeting laws and what impact they have on transparency and effectiveness of local governments here in the Valley. So, Paul, let me start with you. A moment ago, we were talking about those people. We're not going to refer to them as gadflies. Those people who attend every meeting and feel compelled to make a comment on every issue. The Little Hoover Commission referred to their actions as, quote, an abuse of public comment opportunities, unquote. And so they were arguing that there should be something done to curb some of those activities in some way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know what entities the Little Hoover Commission is referring to, but every entity that I've covered here in Tulare County and elsewhere has those kinds of controls. They have public comment periods where people are you know, strictly held to a time limit for their comments on only one subject. They ask the people not shout out during meetings and respond only when they're called to. I really think that the controls are already there. And if they aren't, it's a matter of the body to set up procedures for their meetings. Everybody does that and has to do it. So I don't see this as a big problem.
So, Hilda, what is your experience with these people that come and talk at every meeting?
Well, you know, they can be annoying sometimes, and it can create delays in moving on with a matter at hand. But I do agree with Paul that if someone is abusing the process, there are ways to deal with that. And he mentioned pretty much everything that's allowed under the Brown Act. You can have time limits. You can limit repetitious comments. You can limit irrelevant comments. I believe there are enough there's enough of an ability for the public bodies already to have rules and procedures, and if they don't, they should adopt some. I also believe that it's not just members of the public who sometimes need those rules and procedures or need to be reminded about them, but it's also members of the governing body who need to be clear about what members of the public may say or may not say. For example, they do get upset. Elected officials do get upset when they are people talk about them. But that's permissible under the Brown Act, and that's permissible under the First Amendment. This is an area where we do have that as well, the First Amendment, not just the public meeting laws. But there's a few people that abuse the process, but overall, most people are very deferential. If the body explains the rules at the outset, they will understand that they have 2 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever a particular agency provides to speak, and that they have to present relevant information.
Yeah, usually they do have a time period of 2 or 3 minutes to speak. So, Professor Monroe, is this really more policy is really kind of already in place, but it's a matter of public officials maybe not knowing what the rules are or enforcing the policies like they should?
Yeah, I mean, I think the rules are in place. I guess, you know, one thing that we seem to sort of be treating this as like there are annoying folks who don't bring anything to the meetings, and then there are those that are on topic. And I guess, you know, I see that as being a bit of a false dichotomy. I mean, you know, there are going to be folks who are either truly off topic or just doing it for a reason that doesn't seem at all productive or relevant, and that's a problem. And presumably the procedures will take care of that. But I also think, you know, there are instances where people find it annoying simply because somebody isn't quite as thoughtful as they'd like or isn't sort of, you know, has been repetitive in some way. And I think it's not just about procedures, but it's about finding ways for public officials to engage those individuals in a way that draws out the value in the commentary. I mean, you know, I just like, you know, I have students in class that occasionally, you know, will raise their hand and ask a question or make a comment that I think is sort of off point, but not, you know, useless, right? And the challenge in that instance is to try to draw that person back into a conversation that is sort of productive. Just like sometimes, Mark, you know, you ask a great question and we go off topic. Here, you know, you've got to steer us back. I think it's on the sort of arbiter of the, you know, and the public officials, not just to enforce the rules, to find a way to sort of draw folks, you know, comments out into a more useful dialogue than just sort of dismissing them as being irritating.
Yeah, I guess annoying is in the view of the listener, right? One person's annoying is another person's
right.
Yeah, very knowledgeable comment. Hill, let me ask you this. You know, one of the things the proponents of the existing law are saying is that, listen, the law's fine the way it is. The problem here really is this overly cautious legal interpretation by attorneys representing cities and counties. So as an attorney who represents cities and counties, and explains California's open meeting laws requirements to them, how do you respond? Guilty as charged?
I do try to definitely stay with transparency laws, and if I'm going to err on the side of members of the public. Again, I don't think it's interpreting the laws to too liberally in favor of the public. Again, I think it's members of the bodies often do not know the procedures themselves and the processes themselves and what they can do. And I really agree with the professor that the presiding officers can be so key. Depending on who the presiding officer, it can really make a big, big difference on how members of the public react and how they understand what the rules of decorum are. And what's permissible and what's not permissible, and also that they know that they can't just shut down people because of comments based on content.
Hilda, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you another question, though. You made me think of something. That is, do you see some of these laws being abused, not just in what we're talking about in terms of people want to comment on everything, but what about people who actually use the laws as kind of a litigation strategy, to drive up the cost on a local jurisdiction by filing this Freedom of Information Act request, kind of akin to what they do sometimes with CEQA? Do you see that as a mm-hmm. problem? Does that happen?
I don't see it with respect to the Brown Act and public meetings. I have not seen it here in the Valley. I do know it happens much more in Southern California. I definitely see other laws like CEQA, driving costs up. There's people who don't even know what the environment is and challenging actions based on CEQA. So I see it in other areas. The Public Records Act can be a huge burden for public entities where you have some people just wanting everything that's ever been written. It's working with members of the public and trying to help them frame their questions. Even newspapers, I've often called newspaper people and said, exactly what are you looking for? Mm-hmm. Because the way you're asking, it could take us weeks to get to what you want. But if we know what you want, maybe we can get it faster. And 9 out of 10 times it does help. But I don't see the Brown Act being used for litigious purposes here.
In my former life, I was an attorney on the East Coast, and I represented cities and counties. And I had a situation where a neighbor was mad at his neighbor, who was a police officer, and wanted to get his personnel records for the Freedom of Information Act and all this kind of stuff. So sometimes people can misuse these in certain ways. But let me end on a positive note. So, Paul, let me go to you first. We all have about maybe 30, 45 seconds to give us your recommendations on how local jurisdictions can make their deliberations more transparent, more democratic, more informed. I mean, we're talking about better use of technology. What are we talking about here to do a better job?
I am glad we got to this question. There are many things they can do a better job. First thing, obey the law. Obey the Brown Act. Make sure that your agendas are posted in a timely manner. Make sure they're complete and have thorough information. Public bodies can also meet at times that are more convenient to people. Vary the times and places you meet. Open it up as much as you can to the public. They can use social media, any media for that matter, to publicize issues that are facing that body and urge people to attend. Unfortunately, I have been to too many public meetings, however, where it's obvious that the people who we elect do not want a lot of people at that meeting. And when they see a lot of people coming into meeting, they cringe, they get defensive, and they know they're not going to be in for a good time. They need to reverse that thinking.
Okay, well, we've only got about 30 seconds left, so quickly, Professor Monroe, any recommendations?
I just think I would say public officials should be trained in sort of how to use the public comment as a way, opportunity for discourse, and to think about it as an opportunity to have a conversation rather than sort of something to sit through and suffer through.
Okay, we'll give Hilda the last word. So 10 seconds. What main recommendation would you have to improve?
I agree with the two speakers wholeheartedly on everything they've said. And the more you can post on the internet or on social media as far as procedures so that they know what to do when they get there, and also the posting of information, because if the information is there, they may say, well, I don't really need to even attend. The information is out there already.
So use social media. Well, I want to thank our guest, public sector attorney Hilda Cantu-Montoy, former editorial page editor for the Visalia Times Delta, Paul Hurley, and UC Merced political science professor Nate Monroe. Thanks all of you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
The Matty Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.